They remain our daily murderers and bloodthirsty foes in their hearts. Right? Who is a murderer and a bloodthirsty foe in his heart here in this treatise? It's Martin Luther. This is foul, dishonest stuff. Right? And that's precisely what, of course, he's accusing the Jews of. Well, the Jews are not foul and dishonest. Martin Luther is. Right? Therefore, he continues, I firmly believe that they, the Jews, say and practice far worse things secretly than the histories or records about them record. Right? So he's got all these stories about the Jews. He knows that there's no good evidence for them. He endorses them anyways because he thinks that that's what the Jews really want to do in their hearts. Right? I think that says more about Martin Luther's heart than about the Jews' heart. He is lying against his own conscience. Right? That's how we could diagnose it. He knows perfectly well, or he ought to know, that he's making this stuff up, that he has no good evidence for it, that it's not certain, this stuff that he says about the Jews, far from certain. Right? He's writing out of anger. He's writing like a shrew who's verbally talented, saying, you husband, I don't care whether I actually did it. You husband, it's your fault. Talking back, inventing slanders right and left with this verbal talent that Luther has, alas, writing a book that is fairly memorable. So, there is nothing good to be said about Luther's attitude toward the Jews. So, how might he have done better? Well, let's think about this contrast between 1523 and 1543. How might he have stayed in the good position of wanting to treat the Jews kindly instead of uttering these terrible lies? Well, as I suggested before, the terrible decision he makes, the turning point, is when he thinks that the Jews must be speaking for the devil. That's, over and over again, that's the real watershed point, just as it was with the Pope as the Antichrist, or Karlstadt or Zwingli. And that ought to make us all think twice about any time that Luther decides that someone speaks for the devil. There's something going on that's really wrong here. And as I suggested earlier, there would be no Reformation, no split in the Christian Church, if Luther hadn't decided that the Pope was Antichrist. We got to think very critically about this business of calling your opponent devilish. And that makes me think very critically about the whole project of a Protestantism that is fundamentally a different church from Catholicism. Many ecumenical Protestants have this same worry. There's supposed to be only one church, according to the New Testament. Christians shouldn't be thinking of each other as speaking for the devil. Well, why is Luther tempted to think that Jews are speaking for the devil? Well, no, let me back up just one bit before I get to that. The problem with deciding that someone speaks for the devil is that you're no longer engaging in respectful argument with them, no longer trying to persuade them, right? No longer trying to convert the Jews. Nothing wrong with Christians trying to convert the Jews. That simply means you argue with them. You say, I think this is true. Tell me what you think is true. Right? Nothing wrong with ongoing argument. And here's what I want to propose as the alternative way of dealing with these issues. Right? Luther wants to get rid of those people who speak for the devil. Right? And alas, the Jews are far more vulnerable to Luther's anger than Zwingli or the Pope. They speak for the devil, therefore you've got to get rid of them, you've got to distance yourself from them, have nothing to do with them, don't encourage them, don't let people sort of believe that there's any legitimacy. Don't argue with them, because that means you have to listen to them. Right? Don't listen to them. Right? That's why the flinging of filth. Don't listen to these people. What you should do instead, it seems to me, is argue. Go ahead and say, I think your position is wrong, and here's why. Right? Argue about the truth. The issue is about the truth. And Judaism and Christianity ought to be arguing about what's true, but not arguing on the basis of trying to be certain, trying to show that the other person is crazy, stupid, dishonest, or lying. Just have a good, ongoing, scriptural argument. Jews and Christians ought to argue about the meaning of the Bible, try to persuade each other that the other position is not right. Right? Try to say, oh, the Christian reading of the Bible is better. But that means the way the mutual respect works is you have to listen to the other side say, but the Jewish reading of the Bible is better. I think what makes it mutually respectful is not that you don't say the opponent is wrong. Sure, you think the opponent is wrong. But then you have to listen to the other side when they say, I think you're wrong. And then you continue the argument. Don't try to settle the dispute too quickly. Don't try to win the argument. Just keep on trying to persuade the other. Talk about what's true. Christianity and Judaism ought to exist as an ongoing argument. A little bit like Jacob and Esau, who had some fights. But at the end, of the story of Jacob and Esau. They literally kiss and make up. At the end, they discover the truth together, which Christianity and Judaism should expect to do also in the end of things.